You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Remember Sybil, the famous multiple personality case that frightened and fascinated the nation when the story broke in the 1970s? Sally Field played her in the movies with Joanne Woodward as her therapist, but it was only recently that more information became available about the multiple personality disorder diagnosis and that Sybil had yet another name, Shirley Mason. Journalist Debbie Nathan has researched previously sealed documents in writing Sybil Exposed, the extraordinary story behind the famous multiple personality disorder case. It's published by Free Press, and I'm very pleased that it brings Debbie Nathan back to our show today.
Hi. Hello. Thank you for having me.
When do you remember first hearing about her?
I remember first hearing about Sybil when I was in my early 20s in the 1973, like everyone else I knew, and being completely obsessed with the book. But I remember hearing about the documents being open, the archives being open, and her name being revealed. That happened in 1999, and I didn't think much about it back then. A few years ago, about 4 years ago, I decided that I wanted to write a book by going into an archive. I thought that would be fun.
But you specialize in stories about immigration. This is like a bit of a departure for you.
I do immigration, but I also do something called sexual politics. And when I do immigration, I actually write a lot about sex. But I also write about, I started my career actually writing about ritual satanic panics in daycare centers. And that's actually originally when I got interested in multiple personality, because the idea was that if you'd been severely sexually abused as a child, say in a daycare center, you would forget about it. You would dissociate, as they say. You would fracture. And you could go into court, and an expert would come in and say, the child says nothing happened because the child was so terribly abused. And that was from the theory of multiple personality disorder.
And that was recovered memory, all linked together,
I guess. It was all linked together, yes.
Well, you tell us that Sybil's real name is Shirley Mason. Was that known at the time?
What time?
When the book was being published and we were talking all about Sybil and seeing the movie with Sally Field and Joanne Woodward.
It's funny you should ask that, because her name was very carefully kept a secret from the national public by the author and by the psychoanalyst. But she was from Minnesota. And the author was not very careful in covering up the little details of her life. And everyone in Minnesota knew who she was. But we didn't have Google back then, so nobody could read the papers in southern Minnesota. So the rest of the country never found out.
She was an only child from Dodge Center, Minnesota. Her parents were Seventh-day Adventists. Did that culture have an effect on Shirley?
I believe it did. For one reason, because the leader of Seventh-day Adventism was a woman who got all of her wisdom and power from going into trance. She was the leader of this religion. So the idea of being in trance and getting information about yourself from trance was part of that culture. It was also a culture that believed that the world was going to end any day, and it also believed that people needed to purify themselves and not be interested in any kind of stories except stories that would help them think about holiness. And she was a very imaginative child that liked to write stories and do art, and that was very taboo in her culture.
Pretending was evil.
Pretending was evil.
So she felt guilt about her imagination.
She did. She felt a tremendous amount of guilt.
And later, actually, she went into the arts, so she was able to free herself in that way.
Well, she was a very brave and ambitious and intelligent girl, and I was quite impressed by how she tried to break out of her traditional milieu. And, in fact, all the three women involved in this story were like that.
But there were signs pretty early that she was not completely well.
There were, starting from the time that she was a teenager.
Did she receive treatment?
She had a family doctor who diagnosed her with anemia and gave her what was at the time hog liver extract, which would always help the anemia, but as soon as the anemia was gone and the treatment stopped, she would get sick again. And
somebody might say this was a psychosomatic problem.
Well, if you read the book, you know, there's a little bit of a spoiler in the book that I don't want to go into, but there was definitely somatics in this story that were never recognized until much later.
By the time she entered high school, hadn't her ailments left her kind of marginalized and incapacitated?
Well, she certainly was able to go to school every day, and she was able to graduate from high school, but she was depressed. She had trouble making friends, yes.
And then she came to New York City to go to art school, so she was able to manage that. You would have thought you would have been intimidated by a city like New York if she was totally incompetent.
No, she was not totally incompetent. She was an extremely competent woman with a lot of problems. Many people now have these kinds of problems.
Is that why she wound up going to that therapist, Dr. Cornelia Wilbur?
She actually went to Dr. Wilbur in 1945 after she'd been kicked out of school for fainting for no reason. So she knew Dr. Wilbur 9 years before she came to New York, and they sort of fell in love with each other back in the 40s.
When you say that, are we talking about what's called transference in psychological parlance?
I believe, from what I saw in the material, that Shirley's transference towards her doctor was returned by a very inappropriate type of counter-transference. The doctor got way too personally involved, unethically, unprofessionally.
Although there's no indication, you suggest, that this moved into the sexual realm.
No, but I think to even sort of concentrate on that sort of might miss the point, because there certainly was a lot of intrusiveness and passion that really was beyond sexual in a literal sense.
Well, Dr. Wilbur was a Freudian. Isn't that kind of thing discouraged in Freudian therapy?
She said there were times I found in the records where she said, "I know that what I'm doing is wrong, but you're very special." She also felt that she was a genius in treating hysteria, and Shirley had been diagnosed as a hysteric. And Dr. Wilbur felt that she could do certain things because she was on the cutting edge, and she could sort of invent things as she went along.
Was Dr. Wilbur the first person to suggest that Shirley had multiple personalities?
Yes.
So was that a common diagnosis at the time?
It was a very, very rare diagnosis, extremely rare, but... she had a mentor in medical school who she was very close to, who happened to be fascinated with it. It never really died out. Freud wasn't interested in it. It had been kind of big in the late 19th century. Freudianism had pretty much put it to bed, but there were pockets I discovered of interest, including where she went to school.
Although this is also something that grows out of thinking about the unconscious, or the subconscious. So it might be natural for a Freudian to even be thinking in those terms. But Shirley revealed, as you say here, to Dr. Herbert Spiegel, who filled in for Dr. Wilbur when she was on vacation, that Wilbur wanted her to exhibit other selves. So did Shirley start showing these other personalities simply to please her therapist?
I believe so. I do. From the tremendous archival record that I found, it did seem that she was very needy, wanted attention, understood consciously and unconsciously that this would get her doctor interested, and had the imaginative and fantasy capabilities to produce roles or personalities.
So she could use her imagination now in ways that she was prohibited from using it when she was a kid.
That's right. But I don't know how conscious all of it was.
Well, then Dr. Wilbur used truth serum, sodium pentothal, and hypnosis. Hypnosis was not uncommon in Freudian therapy, but was the truth serum?
Truth serum actually got to be a very big thing during World War II. When soldiers were coming in from the battlefield shell-shocked, it was thought that if you injected them with pentothal, they would remember terrible things that had happened and they would get well. So Dr. Wilbur started doing experiments in the 40s on civilians to try to get them to talk about things. And so it was not mainstream, but it was part of her own mainstream.
Is sodium pentothal addictive?
It is very addictive.
And did Shirley become addicted
to
it?
She did.
When did Sybil appear, and who was she? Was she the first...
Sybil is actually Shirley Mason. I mean, Sybil is the name of what they call the host personality. So there are...
That was just the name they gave it.
That's right. Actually, they originally were calling her Sylvia, and the publishers didn't like that, I think because it sounded too Jewish. But she had 16 personalities. You know, she had all kinds of other names, Helen and Clara and Peggy Sue and Peggy Ann, and, you know, it went on and on.
How different were they?
They actually weren't that different, and that was a problem for the writer, because the writer knew that she needed to have distinct characters, and so she told Shirley that the characters needed to have different ages and different color hair and so on, and so Shirley started generating the different characteristics.
Dr. Wilbur was kind of close to Shirley and revealed personal information about herself during the sessions. That's another thing that's generally discouraged in psychological therapies.
Well, that, I believe, was part of the counter-transference problem.
So they were codependent in a way?
Yeah, some people have even said that they were folie à deux, the French phrase, that they both sort of went crazy as a pair.
My guest is Debbie Nathan, whose latest book is Sybil Exposed, the extraordinary story behind the famous multiple personality case. It's published by Free Press. Dr. Wilbur wrote about herself. How did she see herself?
She saw herself as, she called herself a genius. She called herself an innovator. She called herself primarily a pure scientist.
And how was she viewed within the medical community? Were people aware of what she was doing?
I don't think people were aware of this treatment. People certainly told me, some of the older psychiatrists who are still alive, that she wasn't very pleasant, but they didn't know what she was doing with Shirley.
Now, it's common practice for therapists to go into therapy before they embark on their own careers. Did Dr. Wilbur ever go into therapy?
She was analyzed during her training. She was analyzed by a man named William Silverberg, who was a closet homosexual during a time, of course, if we remember, when it was, you know, homosexuality in America, American psychiatry was really pathologized.
So what did he think, or do we not know?
We don't
what
know.
His diagnosis was?
Of Dr. Wilbur?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know whether you get a diagnosis when you're analyzed. You know, if you're in an analytical, if you're being analyzed as part of your training, you're just analyzed.
But there is a feeling that you've reached a point where you have improved and you've gotten rid of some of the worst aspects of your neuroses. Otherwise, you can't become a therapist.
All I know about that analysis was something that she told Stuart Stern, who did the screenplay for the telemovie. She said that there were times when she was being analyzed that she was on the floor kicking and screaming. She was so angry that she would get so angry she couldn't move. That's all I know.
Oh, that's a bit scary. Flora Schreiber wrote the best-selling book called Sybil that would go on to be adapted into the movie and also spread hundreds of news stories and change people's understandings of the subconscious. How did she get involved with Shirley and Dr. Wilbur?
She was another very ambitious woman who started out as a young woman as a professor, met a lot of frustration in trying to develop a career as an academic and as a serious writer, and went into women's magazine writing. And was approached by Dr. Wilbur to do a story actually about curing homosexuality, and they ended up writing a phony story. And Dr. Wilbur was happy with this story, even though it was fiction disguised as nonfiction, and said, why don't you help me write a book about my multiple personality?
And after Sybil became a household name, there was a major spike in multiple personality disorder diagnoses. As you say, it was rare until then. What happened? Had every therapist gone along with this?
Not every therapist went along with it, but there was a cohort, there was a group of young psychiatrists who got very interested in it, and then later on other people, psychotherapists, social workers sort of joined. A professional organization began, a lot of literature, so that by the early 90s there were 40,000 cases in the United States, and before there had been maybe six or seven dozen.
Well, this sounds to me like something similar to what happens when people make false confessions. If they're suggestible, they will tell you whatever they think you want to hear.
I think the difference is that when people make false confessions, usually the next day or maybe even an hour later after they've had a Coca-Cola and something to eat, they say, wait a minute, you know, that's ridiculous. I didn't do it. Well, then it's too late, of course. With multiple personality disorder, you remain with those memories or with this idea, and you can't shake it, and you get worse. It makes people very, very sick.
And the same thing happens with satanic possessions?
Well, if you go to an exorcist, I suppose you might get better. Multiple personality doesn't necessarily work that way. You may end up hospitalized. You may end up an invalid for years.
So what happened with Shirley? Did she understand what was going on?
It's hard to say, Leonard. I'm not sure that any of these three women always understood what was going on. There was a time when she wrote a four-page single-spaced letter to Dr. Wilbur saying, I never had any personalities. I did this just to get attention. I'm really sorry. Please forgive me, and let's keep doing therapy because I really need help, but let's do honest therapy. Dr. Wilbur told her that she was just resisting. That's another good Freudian term. And I think after that she came to believe it. I mean, so they were all like that. They were all sort of like always going in and out of their own confusion.
And she lived with Dr. Wilbur for many years.
She ended up going into hiding after the people, the good people of southern Minnesota, realized who she was, and some of her own art colleagues. She ended up leaving a very good job that she had and living and going and essentially living with Dr. Wilbur till Dr. Wilbur died. Yes.
Well, a lot of people made money on the story. Did she make any money?
They made money early on, but Dr. Wilbur had always been quite well off. It didn't really matter to her. Flora, the journalist, died completely broke, and Shirley died completely broke as well, and hiding.
Hiding from the public because she had become the kind of celebrity you really don't want to become.
The kind of celebrity you don't want to become and the kind that can't afford for people to know who she is.
So does anybody believe in multiple personality?
Oh, absolutely,
today?
Absolutely. It's in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. It's now called Dissociative Identity Disorder, and many, many people still have it. Many therapists believe that it's real. And I don't think that the issue of whether it's real or a hoax, you know, it's not, it really doesn't help to think about it that way. People who believe that they're possessed by demons, people who believe they have spirits inside them, you know, that's part of our culture. It's a very old part of our culture. And it's kind of like a child. When a child is scared of going to school and gets a stomach ache, you know, you don't say to the child, oh, that's a hoax, that's not real. You try to figure out what the anxiety is and deal with it. So it's the same with multiple personality disorder. I think it's a cultural artifact from right now. People feel it deeply.
But people were burned at the stake when they were satanically possessed. This can be quite serious. Although today we don't do that sort of thing. It ruined Shirley Mason's life.
I think it's actually done a lot of mischief to the culture, and particularly for women, because it has made women's lives that much more difficult. And not only women who are diagnosed with it, most of us aren't. But the idea that's entered the culture that we have to think of ourselves as separate selves or separate beings in order to do the things we want to do, like there's the sexy me, and then there's the me that knows how to make bookcases with a hammer and nails, and there's the me that knows how to cook. You know, I think these are very reified ways of thinking about women, and I think they come about because we are conflicted about our roles.
Rather than just being somebody who has more than one skill. Debbie Nathan's latest book is called Sybil Exposed, The Extraordinary Story Behind the Famous Multiple Personality Case. It's published by Free Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.